Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, September 8th, 2011. Going right into the show, tonight's science topic I'll be talking of, it'll be a continuation of last week. Last week I talked about a hypothetical trip to the nearest star, using nature's method of going there. And so that would include electromagnetic propulsion systems using the naturally occurring electric currents that exist in outer space, the kind of electrical currents we can induce in our atmosphere. But there are other issues and concepts that people have to understand when you're trying to go to another star. It sounds like a great voyage and something you would want to do. But just think of, go back in time to the days of the 1492 with Columbus coming across the ocean in the three little coastal sailor boats. And they were out on the ocean for months, and the sailors believing that Columbus said finally they imagined he didn't know what he was doing. But he kept moving forward because he knew that he had a goal. He was a crazy man in a sense, but he knew what he was doing. And they finally got to the New World and made it back. When they finally made it back to Europe, they had one boat left. The people that survived were all crammed on one little boat and made it into Europe and proved that there was a New World and everything else. That was the beginning. But imagine a trip to a star system that would take, let's say, the next star is 4 light years away, and say we develop a technology that allows us to get there in, say, 60 years. So not the speed of light, but maybe 120 years, something like that. That's not the point. The point is, what do you do on the way? And that's something that the sailors, I'm sure, with Columbus, were not prepared for. They were used to coastal sailing. They were used to going out for maybe a day where you couldn't see shore, but if they turned left, they would get back to shore, or if they went north, they turned right, and they got back to shore. So they were not used to being out there for months and months. And similarly, the human race is not accustomed to being out in the middle of nowhere for long periods of time with nothing to do, without your video games and social networking and television, get in the car and drive around. None of that would be in the works. It just wouldn't be there. So what on earth would you do for 60 or 120 years moving off to the next star system in a spacecraft? But that's one question. I don't know if I can really answer that, but it does bring about some very interesting social questions about what we're doing today, how we live today. And it comes at the time when tonight our illustrious president, the marionette that sits in the White House office, I understand that most of the time watching television, awaiting his next speech where he read the teleprompter. But the point is, his speech is supposed to be about job creation. We all believe we need a job, and we're all supposed to go to work and work that 40-hour week, and then you retire and you get Social Security, and that's the life cycle of the modern human being. But is that really the way things were meant to be as we transition into other modes of living as the space age supposedly unfolds on us, and as the economy and economic systems of the world collapse around us? Where is all this going? What should we be doing? And so looking at that example of going to the next star system gives you a little bit of perspective to look back. And the people could look back from 20, 30, 40 years out into this trip to the next star, still getting information beamed to them from Earth, what's going on Earth. And soon it would become somewhat irrelevant. I've lived in foreign countries for a good part of my life, and you stop listening to the American news. You start listening somewhat to the news in the foreign country, and it's as tainted and twisted as the news is here, but it's just tainted and twisted in another direction. I remember being out of the country during the Nixon era, and people that I would talk to would, oh, what about this and this and this? And I said, I'm not even aware what's going on, and I could care less. But the point is that as you move away from society, you lose interest in what's going on. And I should remind you, that's exactly what the powers that be do not want. They don't want groups moving away from society. They want you to be as focused on the job problem, on the stock market going down, on banking, oh, the interest rate might go up, on, and all of the fabricated problems that exist in the world today. They want you to be concentrating on that. The wildfires in Texas and the flooding in the Mideast or the northeastern part of the United States. Focus on all of those problems, the social problems, the etc. And so anyway, the main science topic tonight, I'll be talking about that space trip to another star, but in a context where we're looking constantly looking at what's going on today. This is somewhat of a takeoff from my book, The Diamond Principle, released about a little over a year ago. And the concept of the Diamond Principle is that society today is a train wreck in the process of happening. It's a head-on collision with a runaway train and a brick wall, or going over a cliff, or going over a trestle or a bridge that's not there. And so there's nothing that can stop it and bring it back. I'll be talking a little bit about that, but the point is, where should society be going? And in analyzing what's going on today, it's really an appropriate time to look at this, because everybody's worried about jobs. The post office is about to lay off 160,000 people. The post office, one of the cores back to the early days of the settlement, the Pony Express, one of the first things that happened was telecommunication, the telegraph, or sending letters back and forth, the Pony Express. And so that's been at the core of our country since its inception, the movement of information securely between one point, whether it's the frontier and back home on the in the East, or just for business, whatever. That's been a core issue of importance, and now you see it crumbling. So it's really indicative, and it's almost humorous to see the president going on television on a night when 160,000 postal workers about to lose their jobs, and he's claiming he's going to create jobs. And it's like, what? He got a rabbit in a hat? It's ridiculous. It's so absurd. It's beyond absurd. But some people will listen and think, oh, he's doing a good job. He's really going to try. But, you know, and it's not a Republican-Democrat thing or who's going to do a better job. None of them have any magic that they can pull this out of. I'm also going to talk a little bit about the Gibson Guitar Company closing that happened this past week. I'll mention briefly, if you haven't heard about this, and it's something, the reason I'm doing this is because the major talk show hosts have not been covering this story. I have people that screen these shows for content, and it's a story that should have been blasted all over the airwaves from the major daytime talk show hosts. But as I've said before, when they don't talk about a topic, number one, it makes you wonder why. And number two, I will talk about it on this show and make it very clear. What happened August 24th, the Gibson Guitar Company in Nashville, Tennessee, which has been around. Let's take a look at the history of the Gibson Guitar Company. When I was a kid, which was a long, long time ago, I don't want to tell you exactly how old I am, but Let's go back into the 50s, into the years before that. The Les Paul guitar. Remember Les Paul was that guitar made Gibson famous for high quality. He played an electric guitar. And now some of the Les Paul guitars go for $200,000-$300,000 in original Les Paul guitar. So these are high quality guitars made in America, etc. Essentially, a bunch of goose-stepping goons ran in armed with submachine guns, went into the company. Now, this I'll mention also, this is the second time this has happened. It happened also in 2008. And shut them down, took a bunch of their paperwork, their books, and materials, wood materials, claiming that they're not obeying international law. And this leads up a whole laundry list of questions. But basically, they're claiming that there's a U.S. law that says that for certain natural resources, U.S. companies cannot use it unless it is worked in the company, in the country of origin first. Well, Gibson Guitar only buys the staves of wood that are ready to go on the guitars, so they clearly have been worked previously. These are all legal issues that the company is dealing with. But in the case of the 2008 invasion of their company, the federal government never charged Gibson with any crime, but they held their materials. They basically, Gibson is going through legal steps now to try and get back the materials that were taken from them in 2008. And they had an agreement with the federal government of cooperation. So why now do you get the goons back in there to raid the company and then basically tell the Gibson company that they have to move offshore if they want to stay in business? They're providing American jobs, so isn't it amazing that a little Obama is going to go on TV tonight telling you how he's going to create jobs, when on the other hand, they're shutting down traditional American companies like Gibson? This is a nostalgia thing. This is America as it developed in the middle 1900s and earlier, being shut down by a bunch of arms-toting goons with no legal authority to do this at all. Why are American companies subject to laws that are passed in foreign countries? There's a whole laundry list of issues here, but it just goes to show that the people, marionettes that are puppets that are running this country really don't run anything. This is all, they're all just a smoke and mirrors, the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain pretending to pull strings, but they have no ability to do anything at all. And so it's clear as the dichotomy of all of this unfolds today. My way of looking at this is, what are we doing anyway? Why are people driving up and down the freeway, working a 40-hour week job so they can pay interest on a house, interest on a car? The economy is based on how many houses we can build, and none are being built now. How many more cars can you build, and nobody can afford cars now? And the premise that this somehow can continue into the future. We don't need more houses. There's a glut of houses, unless you talk about Texas, where they're burning up faster than where they're burning up as we speak. But the point is that society is built on false premises. And those false premises, the false premise economy based on growth simply is not sustainable. It's going to fall. It is falling right now as we can see this. So where should we really be going? Obviously, the path that this is taking is to rob the United States of all of its development and wealth, put it into the pockets of some European bankers. It turns out that right now the only job in town is for companies to stand in line at the local, the state, the federal government door and hope to get contracts. But this is another part of the spiral downwards, because then who has to pay for that? The homeowner, the person with a job, the guy that's trying to make a living, or a retired person. A lot of people are starting to retire now. This cycle of taking money and borrowing more money by governments to pay for useless projects, I'll be talking about a couple of them in a minute here, including one that's a wind farm out of England, at a tremendous expense. That's the point, and so this comes down to a very short summary. The government levels, at all levels, the local government, the county, the state, the federal governments, are piling on debt with useless projects. Many of them have no use at all, or in this economy are not necessary. But that funnels the money and puts a promissory note in the pocket of the public to pay very large amounts of money, thousands and thousands of dollars per household, into these special projects that, once they're done, the money's gone, it's in the pocket of a special interest company, and then the debt is there. The debt looms for nearly forever with interest. And so you can see that what's going on is burying the American public in debt that it can never pay off through the government agencies. So I wanted to start out today by talking about the British. The BBC recently did a story on wind farms around the British Isles. And, of course, the BBC gave the standard government story that this is a great thing. It's for the ecology, green energy. I told you a long time ago that companies would jump on the green energy bandwagon and start using it for their own profitable ends. But it turns out that in England, the cost of putting in currently planned vast wind generation systems is around $10,000 per household. So one has to ask, if this is such a great thing to do, and it's the way of the future, and it's going to be profitable and economical, why aren't the energy companies putting the money into this? Turns out that the governments are putting the money into these projects and putting that burden onto the future taxpayers, mainly people who would use electricity, the homeowners, at the tune of around $10,000 per household throughout England. But the problem is, of course, and I've talked about this before, in fact, I did a special show on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie one night, about the myth of alternative energy, I called it, that especially wind energy, solar energy, the other types of alternative energy, are not capable of producing the energy that is claimed. So, for example, in England, they're talking about a 150 megawatt system. It will only bring in about 30% of that. And let's talk about another system. They're talking about a five gigawatt system, a total energy producing system with 10,000 giant wind turbines. But the reality is that will only produce about 10% in the long term, between 10% and 20% of that amount of power. So it's being sold at one power capacity rating, but the reality is that it will not generate that power, and on days when there is no wind, it won't even produce 1% of the power. And somebody might say, well, at least it's producing some of that power, but here's the problem. You still have to produce or have facilities available to produce all of the energy necessary to take the place of those wind generators when they're producing pretty much no energy at all. The three-blade systems that are out there today, the wind generator systems that you see, are extremely, extremely inefficient. On a good day, on a good windy day, they will only produce about 50% at most, but on average, on a yearly average, the industry standard says that they produce about 21% of the rating of the wind towers. And so, but the bottom line is, a lot of times it's the cold of winter, or it's the hottest day of summer when there's no wind blowing. So you still need that power plant there to produce all of the energy in spite of the fact that you've invested in the wind towers. So the wind towers being tremendously inefficient, and coupled with the fact that the wind doesn't blow at maximum velocity all the time, produces a system in which the, as I said, if this was a great system, then the companies would be investing in this, investing in the future, and they would, it would be a profitable venture, and it wouldn't need government involvement. But the governments are putting the money in this, once again, a boondoggle program sponsored by a government to a large degree. But the end effect is, number one, it's not going to produce the end effect, and of course, that's the visible part of this. But the end effect is that every house in England is going to have a $10,000 bill sitting on top of it to pay into the future. And so there again, I see in small metropolitan areas all over the country, they had to build a new government police fire center. You see these all over the place, and they're way, way overkill. For small towns, these are way overbuilt in size and in scope. A lot of small municipalities are way overstaffed with police. A lot of municipalities are doing road work, water system work, all of these upgrades at a time when the economy is struggling in the dirt, not just struggling, but the lowest ebb it has really ever been, ever. Including lower than the depression, the Great Depression of the 1930s. So the point is that at a time when the economy is lowest, the people are hurting the most, that's when these government entities, and as I said, from the local, the county, the state, and federal, are just pouring the debt onto the public. And there's only one result that can happen here. And that is a complete enslavement of the public for all generations to come to this financial system. There's a guy named Ron Paul who's running for office to eliminate the Federal Reserve and the debt money that is controlling this country. That's another issue. I'm not going to talk about politics tonight. But what would happen if this country were to wake up and get rid of the Federal Reserve, as it should, get back to a monetary-based system? A lot of people think this is a good idea, but how would this actually take place? What would happen? A lot of people think, well, gee, then I'd lose all my money. Well, no, what would happen is you would simply write off the national debt and say that is a bad debt. It was phony money that was created out of thin air, and simply convert the dollars in existence in the economy to real money. And this would be based on buildings that were built, work that had been done, etc. And then you would also eliminate in the same process, and this is where the 1913, all of this came in at one time, the taxation of individual laborers. So all of these things would go by the wayside at one time. And of course, with this would go the control of the bankers. And of course, they have a death grip on Congress. The people in U.S. Congress, 99% of them are completely bought, paid for, and whatever else controls them, they are not going to let this system pass where the Federal Reserve is removed, as it should be, and removed the link from our national banking system to the European banks, the loans that are done for warfare. I've talked about this before, it's the cycle of warfare, taxation, loans for that warfare machine, using the young men and women of the country to fight those wars, those eternal holy wars that can never end, and with the always producing the new boogeyman that has to be killed or fought over there, this system where we always have an enemy, an arch enemy, and the president has to be strong on military, this is all part of the big dog and pony show that keeps the American public enslaved, working 40 hours a week. But this is a small outline of where society is today. Where should society be turning right now? Now that the 160,000 postal workers, that's a huge number of people. That's 3,000 people per state that are losing their jobs. That's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just the beginning at a core industry that should be moving. And remember that the postal system, like the telephone system or like any other support system, should be the small little nub on the side of our entire economy. But when those economies, those support economies, become the main focus of the entire economy, that says that the entire country has been gutted. There is no industry, there's no economy. When you look on the financial report page, and the biggest item that's talked about is the iPhone, you know this country has been completely gutted. And real industry like Gibson is, so that's one observation too, the Gibson company, that I don't think that the wood that they're buying has anything to do with it. That it has absolutely zero to do with it. It's just a way of taking an American company and destroying it and making it move offshore, a company that was just didn't want to leave with all the rest of the companies that moved offshore. So at any rate, now I'm going to make a couple announcements. I have to go through the solar conditions. I have to go through the storm activity that's been going on this past week and relate that to solar conditions. Do a little quick Comet Ellen and update, just because that comet is fading from the news, because the comet itself is fading. It's becoming smaller and less bright at a time when it should become more bright. It just passed perihelion, the closest part of its orbit to the sun, as it went in very close to the orbit of Mercury. And so it should have been a time when this comet was just exploding in brightness, and that's exactly when it started to dim. So I'll just give that, not going to mention it really anymore. I did a special, once again, on Coast to Coast the other night. I did a special on the dimming of Comet Elenin and trying to show people that all of this misinformation campaign that revolved around Comet Elenin was just that, just a big misinformation campaign. So anyway, a couple quick announcements before I get back into the concept of going to the next star and the social implications of doing that, along with some of the scientific aspects. This past week, NASA released, I'm trying to look for a date on this story, and I know it just came out a couple days ago, but at any rate, NASA released a barrage of new photos, or improved photos, I should say, pictures of the Apollo 12 moon landing, or was it 17, I guess the Apollo 17, landing sites, and showing a zoomed-in image. And basically, these look like a couple of pixels scratched on a piece of paper, and somebody took a pencil line, drew it around, said, oh, that's where the people walked, that's where the astronauts walked, here's where the moon buggy drove. And, okay, now these pictures supposedly are being taken by a satellite capable of taking pictures of ants walking around on the moon, and the picture of the the satellite was that it should provide such high detail pictures of the moon, even a rock, even a small rock would be visible, and therefore they could plan future missions, and this would be the entire surface of the moon, which of course would include the alleged Apollo lunar landing sites. But the problem is, when they first came out with the photos, it was more than laughable, because they were nothing more than a couple pixel smudges on a photo of what appeared to be the lunar surface. Now, it's clear that NASA cannot release high detailed photos of these areas, which this camera should surely supply, because just as an example, if you look at Google Earth, for example, you can see your house in Google Earth. You can see the house numbers written on the front of your house. You can see your car in the driveway. If you got something in the backyard, you can see it in detail to tell exactly what it is. And they have the nerve, this is through the atmosphere from a satellite that's much farther away than the lunar orbiter satellite that NASA is using to take a picture of the lunar surface. So it's obvious that NASA just doesn't want to release any real high-resolution photos. And the answer, the question, well, why? Well, that's because a good observer would be able to take those photos and try and coordinate them with rocks and other items that were in the original 1969 to 76 photos of the Apollo lunar, supposedly of the alleged Apollo lunar landings. And you could take rocks and other small details on the lunar surface, and they should all be in these photos, matched up with the shadows, and there would be just too much of a discrepancy. So they can't let real photos out because they simply wouldn't match the photos that were released in the 1969 to 75 era, which we all know now, in fact NASA has admitted, were faked in a studio, in a large studio. So anyway, but the point here is not to keep NASA bashing, so to speak, on this issue. The point is that NASA still has not come across with what is necessary for the whole question about Apollo. It needs a third-party, independent verification. NASA spitting out a couple more photos that were just a little higher resolution than the ones they sent before to the public is not going to cut it. So it's really another embarrassment for NASA. They're trying to buy time. They're trying to sing about the glory days and keep the NASA image going. They're a space agency with nothing in space. They claim that they have scientific experiments that were left by the Apollo landing crews. But there again, the Russians had space lunar landings with equipment. The Russians also had moon rocks, which they retrieved remotely. So none of those arguments hold any water. The bottom line is that it's a waste of people's time. The bottom line is NASA still is fudging on the scientific responsibility of allowing a third-party verification to be produced, stating that, yeah, NASA went to the moon. And that's a scientific reality. This is, for example, the cold fusion. That's a great example. The cold fusion claims made many years ago by Pons and Fleischmann, stating that they had achieved cold fusion. And the whole scientific world got down on them because there was no third-party independent verification, and it was never done, so they were highly discredited. And so the same, using the same standard, NASA has never had verification. It's always their own, in very poor verification. The photos, let me just say this, the photos that NASA released this past week trying to bolster its image that it went to the moon, these pictures would not win second place at a fifth grade science fair. That's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, on to the next topic. I'm going to talk about the sun a little bit. This past week, the sun, auroras, once again, very much lacking from what the standard should be for August and September. People in northern Canada finally getting a small view of some high-altitude auroras, but most of the month of August, in fact, I went on a search for myself for high-latitude auroras, and night after night after night of perfectly crystal clear skies, there was absolutely no trace of auroras in August. And so the point is that the sun is simply way behind schedule, which makes the NASA solar scare announcement even more ridiculous. This past month, they came out with a statement saying that for sure the electric grid would be going down due to a solar flare. As I said on a previous show, that sounds like a promotion, trying to get everybody ready for the grid to go down when a solar flare hits, and a way to shut the entire country down by shutting off the power grid. But the solar activity in all respects, in terms of solar flares, sunspots, in terms of the average sunspot count, looking back over past years, still seeing very low activity compared to what it should be. I looked at the solar conditions today, and the dynamic pressure, which is like the solar wind is a wind of protons that come out from the sun and other charged particles, but primarily protons. The dynamic pressure, which is like the pressure that you would feel if you put your hand in front of a garden hose and felt the pressure of the oncoming water out of a garden hose or a fire hose. The solar wind has a measurement that's exactly like that. And that is called a dynamic pressure. It's a measurement of the solar wind pressure. And it is at basically zero. And it has been. It just sits there, which indicates that we are in the August return current sheet, which I talk about in the weather book, in the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. It's a part of the electrical circuit of the sun. But the point is that really we're in a very low energy state with the sun, which brings up the point that right now we have the remnants of Hurricane Lee moving up from the south as it comes across through the New Orleans area, leaving Texas bone dry. And then Hurricane Katia, I believe I pronounced that right, moving northeast along the United States. But these two seem to be targeting. It looks like they're about to cross in the Virginia area at the same time, which would lead one to believe that these storms are once again being timed. What's the point? And I'm going to make a statement here. I've talked about this before, that, and other people have been very astute about talking about the nuclear reactors on the East Coast. I've talked before about the nuclear bombs that were let off in the Virginia area, southeast, I believe about 11 miles from the epicenter was the North Anna nuclear power plant in Virginia, and with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission stating that there was no damage to that. But the real issue is the dams that hold the water back that cool these nuclear reactors. And as I said, a number of people and groups on the internet very closely monitoring what's being said by the government, what's being done. But the other factor here is that in August we had the Virginia earthquake. And then Hurricane Irene, so that was the 1-2 punch that produced a tremendous amount of water, and those dams that hold the water back for cooling on these eastern nuclear reactors are held back by dams. The dams themselves are in critical condition. Now we have the water coming in from Hurricane Lee from the southwest and Hurricane Katia coming in from the northeast. So this brings up, I want to retrace steps and go back to New Orleans about what year was that that Katrina rolled through New Orleans. I remember looking at video clips. These were live camera clips of downtown New Orleans, and I used to live in New Orleans. I know what it's like. This was a St. Charles Avenue downtown, right downtown where the streetcars, you could see the streetcar tracks the streetcars were actually running, and it was kind of misting. This is after Hurricane Katrina, the morning afterwards, and that afternoon is when they blew the dikes in seven places. There was no surge. There was nothing that caused those dikes to break. So you had seven regions of the dikes around New Orleans in strategic location that were demolished or demolitioned to flood the city and basically destroy the city of New Orleans. And that was very clear that it would flood especially the lower districts, the 7th Ward, those places where the people would simply be flooded out of there. And as I said, that happening after Katrina had really left the area. You could see New Orleans, there was a little bit of drizzle, downtown was dry, there was no floods, the pumps were working great that pumped the water out from the lower regions, and then later that afternoon is when they blew all seven demolitions taking place at around the same time. Clearly a demolition event. And so now my question is, as Hurricane Katia and the remnants of Hurricane Lee move into the Virginia, North Carolina area where there are numerous nuclear power plants with aging dams, will, after the water drops in these areas, will they blow those dikes, those dams that hold the reservoirs, assuring a nuclear problem? And so this is something that I feel strongly about talking about on this show, because nobody else really has the expertise or the insight into looking into these extenuating circumstances. But the point is, the first 1-2 punch of the earthquakes in Virginia and Hurricane Irene were not sufficient to blow those dams. So are we now seeing the onslaught of another so-called natural event that can be used to cause, give a cover story for the people, the psycho people who caused the earthquake in Virginia that drug Hurricane Irene up the coast and now dragging Hurricane Katia up the northeast coast of the United States? Are they planning to blow the dams in the Virginia, North Carolina area, which will guarantee meltdown, lack of cooling on those nuclear power plants? So I'll leave that topic as it is right now. By the way, I said there's a YouTube video of a teacher. She's a doctor. And they show the kids running out of the school with the ceiling falling in. I think you could search on this on YouTube videos. Just search for roof falls in school. I think it's something like that. And then at the end, this teacher comes on and they interview her, and she says, you know, she didn't talk about the roof falling. She didn't talk about, you know, other things. She talked about the fact that the earthquake, she said it didn't feel like an earthquake. It didn't sound like an earthquake. She said it sounded like a big explosion. She used the word bomb. She said it sounded like a bomb. Well, I have news for you, Mrs. I don't know what her name was. I'm sure I can find that again. But it was a bomb, and that's why it sounded like a bomb and did not feel or sense like an earthquake. So at any rate, there's some people running around this country blowing up buildings, pulling all kinds of, trying to use natural events to make it sound like these are natural events. The same situation in Japan, where the tidal waves were caused by underwater nuclear explosions, and then the earthquakes in Japan were rather minimal, the natural earthquakes, but they used those as a cover story. And of course, the news media says anything that they want them to say. Okay, so I'm going to move on from that topic, but I just want to make sure that is out on the airwaves. A quick update on products. This past week, I myself and along with people that helped did a lot of work cleaning up old shipping issues, cleaning up, getting shipping up to date, and also want to mention that CDs, the titles of the CDs will be released in this coming week, in about a week. So the pre-announcement sale of the CDs will still go on for about another week. The point being that you can get your CD before the public announcement of topics, which usually, in fact, the copycat CDs are, they're trying to already send out some kind of copycat information to, even though most people that are doing this don't have the CDs in their hands at this time, it's just kind of a something that happens anytime I have a release. There seems to be little waves of wannabes out there that try and use the tidal wave of information that I send out to try and ride the crest of that and use the fame that is generated from that to produce some kind of product so they can make a buck. But at any rate, and that's somewhat expected, but the point is that the titles of the CD, the two CD set, will be released in about a week, and the pre-sale condition will change to sales. So if you're the sales on those have been very good, I should say that, and expect that to continue through the next, it's a new release, and I think it's been done very well for a pre-release, and that what that does is it gets the information into the hands of the people before the disinformation crew can take it and try and build a disinformation campaign. At any rate, just want to give people who use mail order the mail order address, and it's $17 for one. There's two CDs in the set. So if you want one set, it's $17. That includes shipping. If it's two sets, it's $25. That includes shipping for the two. Actually, the shipping is free if you buy two sets. Anyway, mail order is JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E. Minnesota is MN 55392. Or go to the webpage JMCC. S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, seven letters, JMCC, SCI.com. The mail order information is also at the bottom of the secure web ordering page, but once again, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392, and it's $17 for one set of the CDs, two CD set, or if you want two sets, you get free shipping, and that's $25 for the two sets, so pretty good deal. Okay, on to the main science topic here, the continuation, because I was already talking about this. Remember last week I talked about going to a star, but as I said, what do you do if you're on a 120-year trip to the nearest star? Well, clearly, the way things are right now, that would be three generations of people. So you would have all of the health issues. The third generation would only have a faint history of what Earth was like, the place we came from. And remember that there's no guarantee that there's going to be any place to live once you get there. What is a society going to do? How would a society be built that really does not have all of the things we do today, the social networking, the television shows, and a lot of the television shows are based on Earth situation comedies, drama, a lot of the suspense movies are built on what the government is doing. None of this would exist. I should also say that there are no jobs in outer space. There's no economic pattern for outer space. What people are doing today, going to a 40-hour-a-week job so they can pay the rent or pay for the house payment, and you look at the amortization schedule, I've talked about interest before, none of this was ever meant to be. What does the large amount of interest paid on a house Just as an example, people I knew built a house in the mid-1970s, paid $30,000 for a beautiful Rambler brand new house. $30,000. The house payment was $235 over the 30-year period. They paid it all off, and when after that 30-year period, the house was worth $200,000. Well, in terms of if you went to buy a carton of milk or a gallon of gasoline, or if you went to buy anything else, a car, an automobile, or whatever else, then all of those prices similarly were multiplied by a factor of 8 over that same period of time. So really, there was no gain in money. It just seemed that way. But did the house gain value? Well, no, it didn't gain in value. The price was inflated. And so the point is that most people don't buy a house and simply pay it off. They refinance it, and then they refinance it, and then they refinance it. So they never, ever pay the loan off, and the value of the house keeps going up. Maybe they put one of the favorites is paying for kids' college with your house equity. Now it's worth more, so you can get this equity amount out. And all of this, of course, has gone by the wayside. But the point is that the value of the housing has gone up dramatically. And so at a time, I remember as a kid, my friends and our family and all of the people around us, my dad worked, I think he made 75 cents an hour. He was able to make a house payment, have a car. Mom did not work, or worked very little. And we had food on the table. We weren't rich. We didn't have a lot of things, but got a good education. And you could live at that time with a one-worker income. Now it's impossible. They have, you know, the insurance, everything that you need to survive in the modern world has gone up and up and up, to the point where people simply cannot, and then the governments are spending money, etc., that people simply cannot exist anymore. But the point is that if we could revert back to a point at which people were taking care of themselves, everybody had a garden. But you see, we can't, because the people in the cities, they can't have a garden. You have most of the people, and I would venture to say that 95% of the people today are doing what I would call useless work. They go to work, they do things, but it really doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't produce value to the society. They move papers, they write emails, they do stuff all day, but in terms of producing usable value for the society, 95% of all jobs today are worthless. And so, taking that point of view, I want to make a comparison. One time I gave a talk to a number of scientists. There was a pretty large group, in fact. And I talked about resources. And everybody in the group was in government programs and got all of their funding from governments. Well, if you were in government funding or through venture capital, the first thing you did was you built a corporation entity. You needed a CEO, you needed advisors, you needed consultants, you needed a financial advisor, you needed all of these different things before you even hired the first person. And then, so literally what I did is I looked down through the corporate structures, and the bigger the corporate structure became and the more investment that went into it, the bigger the corporate structure became. And the smaller percentage of actual money that went towards scientific research and development. So the point is that today the vast majority of people, engineers, scientists, are working for government programs, but how much of that money actually goes towards the actual development and research related to the final product, the final end entity of whatever is being developed? And the end result is that maybe 5%. If you look at NASA, probably less than 5%, maybe down to 2 to 1% of the money that goes into NASA actually goes towards scientific, actual scientific achievement. or production or progress. So, given that, let's take a company that's worth $1 million, let's say that. And so 10% of that is $100,000, and half of that is $50,000. So that's 5% of $1 million. If you could take $50,000 and develop a product or a concept or an engineering development, you could match any project worth $1 million being sponsored by the government. Now, if you take that same $50,000 and you break it down and you say, well, of course, that would go for raw materials, for development, for laboratories, for other equipment, let's say. But let's say you are a very original person and you can find resources. Now, this was the point of my talk. I said, I don't talk in terms of monetary resources. I talk in terms of resources, physical resources. If you are ingenious enough to where you can come up with resources, you can take that $50,000 and pare it down to $10,000 and produce the same $1 million product. Now I want to talk a little bit about the people going to the next star. The point is that you have, if you look at what we're doing today, 95 to 98% of all of the work that is being done today is useless work. What would we replace that with? And this is the social dilemma that I'm talking about. I talk about this in the Diamond Principle. And as a society, we don't have what it takes to go into space because we don't have the wherewithal to understand what to do with our lives. There was a place called Lemuria in history. It was in existence at the same time as Atlantis. It was allegedly a continent in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. But they spent most of their time with social advancements, understanding, talking to other people, etc. So the point is that before you go to that next star system, society as we know it has to make some radical changes. So at any rate, that's a great topic tonight as the president goes on the air trying to justify his existence when there are 160,000 jobs being lost and Gibson Guitar Company is being thrown out of the country. About out of time once again, make sure you get a copy of the new 2-CD release, basically dealing with the Planet X survival issues, and the titles for all of the topics being discussed, as I said, will come out in the coming week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.